Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Wisdom Chat. I'm Phil Holdsworth, your host, and my wonderful guest today is Susan Scarra. She is a mindful coach, and you work with adults and children, Susan. Welcome to Wisdom Chat.
Thank you very much, Phil. It's lovely to be here.
It's a pleasure. It's a great honour to have time just to have a chat with you. Now, as I normally ask all my guests to explain a little bit about themselves, not just you, but the work that you do. But also, Susan, if you don't mind, just throw in a little bit about your musical prowess, if you wouldn't mind.
I'm not sure that's quite the right word, but very briefly, I'm originally from Chicago, came over to live in the UK many years ago. I taught primary school for 20 years. Then I got into marketing for a while, social media marketing. And more recently, I got into mindfulness in a big way. And I found it helped me tremendously. And so I went and studied it. And then I got into mindfulness CBT, which I find it's slightly like the normal CBT, but it very much is founded on mindfulness beliefs, and I love that. And I do work with children, young children as well, which might surprise some of you, but even younger primary age children are displaying, unfortunately, it might be self-esteem issues, it might be problems adapting to a broken home, things like that. And so I do hour-long sessions with them, and we learn how to not engage so much with the negative thoughts and feelings. And I do that with adults as well, and how to get past those, and techniques to use, mindfulness techniques, to sort of, you know, concentrate on the here and now and enjoy what you've got in the moment, and not let those past or worries about the future get on top of you and control you.
Yeah. And for our listeners, CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, but you said with a mindfulness
yes.
Pain or influence.
There's a couple of slight differences. I mean, the main one is that with CBT, you can sometimes want to go over and over a particular negative thought, whereas with mindfulness, we try not to do that. We try not to engage with these negative thoughts. Rather, we learn how to just say, okay, there's a negative thought, bye-bye, rather than, oh, negative thought, I must now focus on that and let it, you know, get inside my body and that. But it's quite an interesting viewpoint, but I think it's gaining popularity now. That's what I believe.
Yeah, I've actually done a CBT course, actually being presented to, not presenting it. And it was a 6-week course. And it certainly, the thing that really struck me about it was it equipped you with tools and techniques to manage perhaps unhealthy mindsets and the repercussions of those mindsets, and how that would impact you as a person, your health, your well-being, your emotional and psychological side. But it was interesting. One of the things that it really struck me was when you look at people and how they react to circumstances around them, do we ever sort of dig deeper into where did that come from? So, and I think, you know, there's a lot going on in our society at the moment, isn't there, in terms of not just the sort of the financial challenges people are facing, but there's a lot of unrest globally at the moment as well, and people are sort of concerned about a lot of things.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's funny, the mindfulness CBT, someone will come in and almost inevitably what they say the problem is initially, we sort of find out that that's not the root of the problem. You know, we sort of dig down and find out this was, either past trauma or, you know, a particular phobia or whatever. And I think sometimes it gets buried and then things just pile on top and top and top and you think, oh, this is the problem. And then we say, but is that the problem? What else could it be? And what else could it be? And what else could it be? But getting back to the music side of things.
Yeah, yes.
Yes, I never studied music. I never sang. I never did anything. But some friends, I suppose about 15 years ago, or maybe even 20, got together and formed a band. And I was desperate for some reason to be in this band. And they needed a bass player. And so my son got me a bass and an amp and said, learn it. So I watched videos and I had a few lessons with a great guy, John Marley, excellent bass player. And I got to the point where I could play rock and roll songs. Not well, I'd never be a flea or, you know, but enough, you know, I got by and I was also allowed to sing lead vocals on one or two songs, which was, you know, I was so excited about. And then I went with the drummer of that band and formed another band and sort of fronted that and sang a lot of the lead vocals and played bass in that for about 10, 11 years. And oh, just wonderful.
It's
wonderful.
As we said prior to our recording, you know, it's amazing what you learn about people. And I have a great privilege of sort of getting sort of lots of interesting sort of facts and details about different people's lives. And sometimes you look and you're thinking, well, I would never have thought that. And but having said that, you know, I think it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because the work you now do, you think of people who are in, say, the music or the entertainment industry, who and we've seen some high profile cases where people have been through circumstances that we would probably deem as quite traumatic.
Yes.
And difficult, challenging in many ways, and the impact that it's had. I often think of people who make it in the music scene, for example, they're never prepared for sort of fame.
No.
And what fame might draw to them, what it might attract, mm-hmm. and how people might be and how people might treat them. Oh, and how they might respond to that, that may not be helpful. And I suppose that really speaks a lot about, you know, the work that you do in terms of how people perceive things, how they perceive the way they come across, or
yes.
how somebody is with them. And we're very quick to make judgments, and we might be way off the mark.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's interesting because mindfulness teaches never to judge.
You
shouldn't judge, which is, we're taught almost from birth to judge. It's just the way society has us, and you make judgments about all sorts of things. And how many times throughout your day do you judge someone for what they look like, what they're wearing, what they've just said? And mindfulness teaches shouldn't do that at all. But how difficult is that? You know, it's not an easy thing. I find myself thinking, oh, I've just made a judgment I shouldn't have made. It's not an easy thing. But yes, I mean, in any sort of, I think, industry, well, the celebrities and music idols, they face such, you know, and some of them are overnight successes, and how, they're not equipped to deal with what's happening to them, you know, and there's so many people ready to take advantage. And how do they deal with it, you know? And some turn to, you know, drugs and drink. And but then I think people are wising up slightly, and they realize, you know, they could start meditating, or, you know, to try and deal with the harsh realities and the pressures and things. But no, I mean, we've had too many people who've, and unfortunately, an awful lot of suicides, you know.
That is very sad to hear that, when you think of, you know, there's another life lost, which needn't have happened. And you often wonder what was really going on in their lives that eventually led to that choice that they made. They clearly came to a place where they just felt like there's no hope or no way forward, or the future looked too bleak for them.
And to us, it seemed like they had everything in the world. You know, why would they
Yeah.
want to take their own lives? I mean, it is very, very sad.
It just reminded me there. It's how often we respond in society to things. So I work on the financial side, and one of the things that really at times makes my blood boil is the notion that people who save are good with money, and people who spend are bad with money. And I find that absolutely dreadful that we could easily come to those conclusions. And I've often seen people sit there in judgment when somebody has found themselves in debt, and they have no idea of that person's life journey and what that journey had been like. And yet so often there are people who are, we would probably say, great savers, who are so unhappy.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, even on a personal note, my husband and I have never been the best savers in the world. We chose really to give our children, you know, wonderful experiences. And that's how, you know, so maybe we were right, maybe we were wrong, I don't know. But we've given them such happy memories and wonderful times that we feel, felt that was more important than having, you know, a potload of money in the bank.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, because we decided exactly the same thing with our children. And the one thing I would say to anybody is you only live once, so make it count. And it's not just about everybody else. You know, there's times to look after you and your family and your children and give them those memories going forward as well. So, we're talking about, we've touched on the sort of the music scene, certainly the entertainment industry, where in terms of, you know, sort of theatrical and movies and things like that. People act in roles, don't they?
Yes.
But yet in life, people are acting in roles when they assume a certain persona, particularly if, for example, trying to please somebody else.
Yes.
But, I mean, how do you, when somebody comes to you and they're sort of talking with you, you said earlier that oftentimes when people come, it's the issue they think actually isn't the real issue, it's something else. Do you often find people sort of adopt different kind of personas, perhaps to fit in?
Yes, I think, I do think it stems from, generally, from low self-esteem. You know, they feel the real them, as it were, isn't good enough or won't fit in, or so they mold themselves into something that they think will be more popular or be more successful or people will like more. I see a lot of people pleasers who never say no. Never say no, because they think that's the way to get friends, that's the way to be liked. But it isn't actually, because you're not being authentic, you're not being you. And never being able to say no, even when it's going to cause you problems, is a bad thing. You know, you have every right to say no. This will cause me suffering, if you like, pressure, whatever. So I have every right to say no in this instance. But there's a lot of people who feel they just can't do that. They have to say yes, 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 or, you know, they're going to be ill thought of.
What do you think are some of the barriers that people face or in their thinking, their perception, that actually prevents them from being able to say no?
Now, that's a very tough question to answer, because it's different for different people. But I don't know. They must think that, I think for at least some people, they feel that it's just really, I think, that they're so desperate to be liked.
They
cannot say the N-word. They just have to say yes all the time, because they so desperately want to be liked by people. But
people who
they're trying to attract, you know, just by saying yes all the time, surely that person who's asking so much, you know, if they were a good friend, wouldn't be, you know, I'm not making myself too clear, but
no, I was thinking as you're talking then, one of the issues I think that people really don't like, and you're right, there are many reasons why people struggle to be able to say no, or you know, not fulfill what they believe is right for them, but is rejection.
Yes.
Nobody likes to be rejected. Yeah, and rejection, particularly if it leaves you kind of isolated on your own, is quite a horrendous thing. And it's, and it doesn't necessarily just come with, you know, somebody's rejected you. It comes with the fact that, what are people saying about me now? How do people perceive me as a person? And I know that from my own personal experience, where I've been through a situation where I've had a sort of in a way a kind of narcissistic boss or leader, mm-hmm. And it's only after the event that you discover that this person themselves has their own issues, but unfortunately, the way that they conduct their affairs, those issues bleed onto other people as though it's their problem, not theirs.
Right.
And so you find yourself at the end of, you can't do anything about this situation because the issue is not you, it's the other person. But you then suffer the rejection that, yes, you know, you're not welcome here anymore. So, you know, having been on the receiving end of that, I can understand the power and the trauma to be rejected.
Oh yes, and there are people who, you know, their lives as children, they haven't had a lot of attention or a lot of love from parents, and so you instantly think, well, it must be your fault, you know, why weren't you loved more, or, you know,
yeah,
why wasn't, you know, I must have been a bad child or whatever. And I think that's another thing, you know, you're so desperate for anyone to love you, you know, so you can't, yeah, say no.
Yeah.
Which is very sad, because that's definitely not the answer. And sometimes we're taught that we must never think of ourselves, we must always think of others. And so there's that aspect, you know, I can't say no, because then I wouldn't be a good person if I said no, you know.
Yeah. But yeah, things like, yeah, you must be selfish or something like that. And actually, it's got nothing to do with selfishness. It's actually got to do with valuing yourself and caring for yourself as much as you would for somebody else.
Bit of self-preservation. It's, yeah.
Yeah.
If something is going to cause you suffering, you know, and I use suffering, you know, with a small s, then I think you have every right to say no. That doesn't mean that, you know, you're a bad person by any means. It just means on that occasion, you just can't do it for whatever reason. It's just not going to work for you. And if somebody says, oh, well, get lost then, you know, well, too bad. You know, that's,
yeah,
somebody sees you as being unreasonable, you know, just,
yes,
that's their problem, not yours.
I mean, I was just thinking in terms of, I suppose the perception that we have in terms of how we communicate with other people, and those moments where the other person's reaction has taken us by surprise, because you thought you were very clear, or you thought you were trying to be encouraging, and they've almost taken it the wrong way. What are some of the things that you see in that? Because I suppose in some respects, we assume that we're communicating clearly and communicating in a certain way that a person will get you straight away. But that isn't always the case, is it?
No, I think most of us, I think, you know, like to think of ourselves as reasonable people, and we're communicating well and clearly. But if you're not really being mindful when you're communicating with someone, you could definitely, you know, including your body language, but your words as well, it's perhaps coming across differently than if you're not paying total attention to what you're saying in the moment or doing at the moment, you might think, oh, that was, you know, I said all the right things, and but the other person sees you totally differently. You know, well, why did you say that? Why are you like this? And you think, oh, was I like that? But I think, you know, we're too caught up in our own, in what's going on in our heads, and we don't always think about too carefully about what we're saying, what we're conveying. Are we even listening? How often do you have a conversation with someone? Maybe someone comes up to you and they want to tell you something, and the moment they start talking, you're bored.
Yeah.
And you think, well, I'm not really interested in this, so I'm going to interrupt and start telling them what I think is important about this topic. And so, you know, mindful listening, I keep going on about mindfulness, but mindful listening is really taking the time to allow the other person to speak, to concentrate, to focus on what they're saying, consider it, you know, and then respond. But I think, and I've done it many times in my life, you know, somebody starts saying something, I think, oh yeah, well, yeah, I've got a viewpoint about that. And I just cut in, interject, and I think what I've got to say is far more, you know, valid and important, you know.
And yeah.
And you think, there's nothing wrong with what I just did or my conversation, but that other person is thinking, huh, you know, well, not too keen on this, you know, what you've just said or done or your attitude. And so they're seeing a version of you that you don't recognize.
Yeah.
You know, there's someone who maybe is a bit selfish, a bit self-important, you know, it's all about me. And that's not how you perceive yourself at all, you know.
Yeah. As an example, I remember years ago, somebody actually said to me that, you know, you're intimidating. And it was in a particular setting where I was working with a group of people. And I thought, well, that isn't my perception of, you know, I certainly don't go out of my way to intimidate anybody or anything like this. So I thought, I really want to get to the bottom of this, because if I'm causing upset of somebody else, I don't want to do. I need to change. So I gathered together the people I was working with, and I asked them and I pleaded with them to be really honest with me and tell me, was there anything about my interactions with them that they wanted to make comments about, or that I needed to be mindful of and change? And everybody was scratching their head, and the person who made the comment to me originally wasn't part of this group.
Right.
But I trusted this group,
yeah,
to be honest with me. And so the comments were coming back saying, well, we can't really think of anything, Phil. And then all of a sudden, this one person said, well, I don't think this is an issue as such, but you do get very passionate about things. And I said, yeah, no, I appreciate that. I do, actually. Things I really do believe in, I do get passionate about. And this person said, sometimes I wonder if that passion gets the better of you and you lose sight of the other person. And maybe because of your passion, you come across as being very confident, and this other person then may feel somewhat intimidated. And I thought, you know what? I've never thought of that. That's a valid point, is that?
Sorry, what you did was absolutely the right thing to do, because if someone tells you, you know, they perceive you differently and you don't like what you're hearing, it's all too easy to say, well, I don't know what they're on about, you know, they can go. But it's much better to reflect on it and to say, well, is that a possibility? Is this a truth here? And get to the bottom of it like you just did, because it's all too easy to just throw up a barrier and say, you're wrong, I'm right, and carry on. And then you're not growing as a person. You're not improving. You know, you're not helping the other person. And it's, and narcissists are famous, you know, a certain person running for president of the United States is a very good example of that. I mean, it's like, I don't know, no matter what he does or what he says, or it's, he's just, you know, that's not his version of himself.
It's interesting, isn't it, how people can have certain versions in their minds of themselves, and when somebody's sharing something with them, they say, no, you're right in what you've described. Just, no, that isn't me at all. Mm-hmm. And And the thing is that they assume that they know themselves and how they come across to others straight away. But let them listen to their own voice.
Oh, yes.
And all of a sudden, you say, oh, do I really sound like that? Yes, you do. And yeah, it's not what you're hearing. And there is a scientific reason for that, but that's a good example, isn't it? Of
it is. And I had, there is someone that I would like to be closer to, and I was talking to that person's husband because we know each other well, and I expressed this, you know, I wish we were closer, and I don't understand why we're not closer. And he said, well, do you want me to be honest with you? And I thought, uh-oh, what's coming? And he said, well, sometimes you come across like you're feeling sorry for yourself, and that puts her off. And I thought, do I? And that was quite an eye-opener. I thought, is that true? Could that be true? Well, it could be. I don't necessarily think I'm sort of throwing a pity party, but maybe I am. Maybe I'm complaining, and maybe it's coming across like that. And so that really, I was very pleased that he told me that. I didn't like it. I thought, okay. And so now I'm much more aware of my, you know, negative comments or anything that could be construed as, you know.
I often say to people who will make a comment, I'll say, really? I said, can you give me some examples? Because I just don't understand.
Yeah.
But if you give me some examples, I might be able to understand what you're saying to me and understand what I then need to do to change. So I'll often go to them, you know, a trusted person, and say, can you give me some examples? Just so that I can understand it in my own thinking, what other people are seeing and how they perceive me.
No, that's very good. Not everybody would feel comfortable doing that, of course. They might not want to be that honest or, you know, open up about things.
I suppose it's about trust, isn't it? I mean,
absolutely.
You're talking about being vulnerable. And I remember going back to this person who accused me of being intimidating and telling them what I'd done, how I'd gone to this group of people and asked them for their feedback. And they were shocked that I'd actually done that. And I thought, well, maybe you wouldn't do it because you feel insecure in you and you wouldn't necessarily be happy if somebody shared something with you that you didn't like.
Yeah, but actually, it's helping you in the long run. So it's the way you, yes. But there again, I think there's self-esteem and it comes into this, but it's the way you look at it. Okay, this was a negative thing I've just heard, but I can turn it around into a positive thing. You know, which is, I didn't like hearing that I felt sorry for myself, but I can't deny it totally. You know, I've gone back over conversations and thought, okay. And I feel that's helped me tremendously, you know, to get a better relationship going.
I certainly found it very liberating, very freeing, because I didn't, going back to what we said earlier on about personas, I could be me and be comfortable in my own skin. I wasn't always like that. But because I took that stance and I took it on the chin in a way, like you, Sue, it was not an easy thing to hear, because I never liked to think of myself as being an intimidating kind of a person. But
I can't imagine that, but you know.
I suppose it goes back to what we say about communication, though, isn't it? Because the people assume that we just communicate via words, but actually, certainly 3/4 of how we communicate is body language and tonality. Small part is actually words, and so therefore you can see how people are very surprised when their emails are received in not too a friendly manner, or text messages and things like this, because they haven't understood how that might sound to the recipient.
Right.
And the recipient doesn't have body language and tone to go on. So they've only got the words. So you've got to choose your words very carefully.
Even something as simple as eye contact when you're speaking to someone, you know, can make a tremendous difference. People think, you know, if I was sort of talking to you, or you were talking to me and I was doing this, you know, it was like, well, I haven't got your attention, you know, it's not a good thing. But yeah, body language. I mean, you talk about being comfortable in your own skin now, but you weren't always. I was the same. I suffered with imposter syndrome for quite a few years, and worked in this very, and this was about 7 years ago. I had a job as a copywriter in Leeds, and very youthful office. And I just thought, what am I doing here? These people are all talking about me. I'm doing a terrible job. They think I'm too old. I shouldn't be here. I don't fit in. And I had a rough time. I made the rough time. And of course, the reality was totally different. You know, it wasn't the case at all. And mindfulness has helped me sort of beat the imposter syndrome. But at the time, it was, I had this version of myself that wasn't actually right, you know. So not only can other people see a version of you that you don't recognize, I imagined a completely different version of myself that actually wasn't true. I was inept, and you know, all these negative things, and I just wanted to run away and hide, really.
It's interesting that can permeate so many aspects of life, because that's something I regularly come across with some of my clients when they talk about, oh, I'm bad with numbers. I was never any good at maths, therefore they never will be any good at maths. And so they're telling me these things, and I'm listening. And then I say to them, do you go to the supermarket? Well, yes, I do. Of course I do. Okay, well, when you're at the supermarket and you're looking at the products that you're wanting to buy, do you ever look at the price? Well, yes, I want to see, you know, what I'm spending my money on, and can I get something cheaper or what have you? And I said, so you're adding things up, you're taking things away, you're multiplying things, and you're dividing things, and you know, subtracting, and they say, yeah. So I said, well, who told you were no good at maths? And all of a sudden they go, oh. I said, I tell you what's going on is we go through an education system that wants us to learn all these different facets of mathematical formula and, you know, like Pythagoras theorem and quadratic equations. But I'll ask everybody, when have you ever used those?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're starting to get sort of perspective in terms of the truth relating to a person. So how they've seen themselves, but then how, like you were saying, Sue, about how others might see them, but what is the reality? What is the truth? How do you help people like that who clearly there is a disparity between how they see themselves, but the truth about who they are?
Well, I usually, they'll come at me with various different things negative about themselves, and I'll say, okay, let's break this down. How much of this is fact? What is actually fact? And what is something that you imagine is real? And we break down each thing that way. Well, okay, maybe it's not real, but I believe it to be so. And so we have to separate the fact from the fiction. And that happens so often. I think that's probably at the root of a lot of our problems is what we perceive in our minds, and we take it as fact, is actually nothing of the sort. It's something we thought up, imagined, taken on board, got it from somewhere, and we've just developed it and spiraled it into something that we think is absolutely bona fide true. And it didn't stem from any truth whatsoever. And so we break it down that way. And eventually they realize, oh, actually, you know, I've had the wrong end of the stick for a long time. You know, this isn't true. So that's, yeah. And sometimes it can happen very quickly, and other times it takes a while to get down to, you know.
I like what you say about introducing people to the facts of the matter, because I think you can't argue the facts. So, yeah, that's great. And I was just mindful. I think it's Carl Jung who talked about, I can't remember the exact words, but it was the way that the mind conjures a world that actually isn't the reality. It's either how we perceive ourselves based on the beliefs that we've built up since childhood, or our desires. You know, like, for example, somebody who thinks that they can sing and they sound like a cat on a hot tin roof.
You're not talking about me, are you?
No. Heavens, no. But, you know, I'm using that as a, you know, an example of when, you know, people say, well, I'm singing, and you're thinking, dear me, that's singing, you know, and so it's how they perceive themselves and how what they desire, as well as the beliefs that they carry about themselves.
I mean, even in the corporate world, you know, you'll get a manager of a team and he'll think he's great and he's popular with his team and he's doing a super job keeping the productivity going because he's, you know, got these sky high quotas and he's really strict. And of course his team aren't about to tell him the reality, you know, so they'll be okay. And if he was more empathic and more understanding and came at it from a different approach, he'd probably find that productivity doubled, you know. You know, somebody came to him asking for flexible working hours or something along those lines, well, that's okay. But in his mind, he's, you know, I'm an A1 manager and my team are great. But there's no, you know, he's not seeing the reality. He's not seeing what they see.
And I think, unfortunately, there's probably a lot around that are like that. But Sue, I'm just mindful that time's passed us by, and I was just thinking, I was just thinking that you know, people listening to this podcast may find, you know, themselves nodding their head in agreement to some of the things we've talked about. If they wanted to speak to you and sort of ask you sort of further questions, I mean, you are a person who clearly, just the way that you talk, the way you are, you put people at ease. And I think if somebody's going to talk about things as personal as about themselves and make themselves vulnerable, they need to feel that sort of they at ease and trusting. So how would they get hold of you? How could they find out a little bit more about you? And
well, they could go to my website, which is suesmindfulnesscoaching.co.uk. It's a bit of a mouthful, but I'm also, I don't do a great deal on social media, but I have got a Facebook page. I'm on LinkedIn and Instagram.
Right.
But the best way, I suppose, is either contact me through LinkedIn or via the website. You can find out a lot more about me on the website.
Okay.
Now that's mindfulnesscoaching.co.uk.
Yeah. That's brilliant. Sue, it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you. Perhaps we'll get to talk again at some point in time. But I wish you all the very best as well.
Thank you. You too. See you soon.
Okay. Take care.
Bye.